Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.
Stuff that changed the world.
The mobile phone.
The internet changed the world.
Penicillin, I would have thought.
I would say sanitation.
It changes everything.
Now, in this slot, myself and Simon Tierney have often talked about things that have nothing to do with us, hair, for instance, or handbags. But today, a subject that's close to both our hearts, as we both like to pump as much iron as humanly possible. How the gym changed the world. Simon, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Sean. We're a member of the same gym, aren't we?
I think we are.
I always see you in there at 6 a.m.
Always in there, yeah, 6 a.m. Yeah, running on the... pumping the thing.
Yes, indeed.
Running on the tread thing.
It's so nice to spend time with you outside of the gym.
It is actually, yes.
It's really refreshing.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, musky male scent that comes off you once you've, you've worked up a bit of a sweat.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and then he goes and eats nachos in the bus on the way here. Oh, empties the bus in 10 seconds. Right, anyway, I assume the ancient Greeks are maybe responsible for this.
Yeah.
Then again, it was kind of warm outside, so did they need an actual gym?
No, precisely. In fact, the idea of putting a gym indoors didn't come about until the very late 19th century. The gymnasium, coming from the ancient Greek word gymnasion, which means the naked place.
Okay.
Yeah, bizarrely. I was a bit surprised by that, but it makes sense in a way, because the way the gym worked in ancient Athens, Sean, there were two main gyms. There was the Lyceum, which was run by, was part of Aristotle's academy. And then there was the academy itself, which was run by Plato. And the idea at that time was that the gym was part of a larger cultural institution, and that exercising not only the brain, but also the body, was important for overall, sense of being a good and all-rounded human being. But it was done outside, and it was done naked, always. There are a number of reasons for this. Probably the most important reason was that it was a way, pre-photography, pre-Instagram or anything like that, it was a way of displaying your physique to other men in the gym in a narcissistic sort of way. You know, the history of the gym is in many ways a history of narcissism. And at that time, it was men only who were using the gym. Women weren't allowed to use it. And it was a haven for men to enjoy their bodies together, often in a gay context, for sure. That's how it worked. But when I say it was outdoor, how does it compare to the modern gym? Very different in many ways, except in motivation. We're talking about, discus throwing, javelin throwing, the ancient Olympic pursuits, which is what were practiced in the ancient gymnasium. For the development of the body beautiful, or aesthetic training, to keep the body looking good. What was similar to the modern gym is that sense of the body beautiful and appreciating your body and feeling good about your body. That's what's similar to the modern gym, I guess.
Yeah, and all the gay sex, of course, as well.
Possibly. I mean, one should say that there's for many periods during history, not just in ancient Greece, there has been an important association between the gay community and the gym. Particularly, for example, in the 1970s in New York and San Francisco, we see the emergence of the gym as a place, not necessarily gay gyms, but there were gyms where gay people felt comfortable to congregate and to spend time together.
Well, that's what's interesting, really interesting about the history of the gym, is that there are continued attempts, and often successful attempts for long periods of time, to suppress it. And one assumes for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, after the collapse of the ancient empires in Europe, and we see the rise of the Christian church in the Western world, that the gym was really frowned upon for a number of reasons. Firstly, because the body was seen as sinful, and the gym was associated with nudity, so you couldn't be having that. Mm. And secondly, it was associated with eroticism and with homosexuality, and the Christian church obviously denounced any relationship with that. So for those were some of the reasons. The third really important reason that the gym went out of fashion until the mid-19th century is because the idea of doing exercise or moving the body vigorously like that was thought of as the preserve of the poor, of the working man. Why would a gentleman want to move his body in a vigorous way like that? That sounds like labour, which is the last thing a gentleman would want to be engaging with.
Yeah, but even it was known that there was a connection between activity and health.
Oh, not for a long time. Really is. Like, we really take for granted the idea that we can change our bodies. Like, right through the Renaissance, the Baroque period, the idea of finding yourself being obese was like, well, that's that then.
Yeah.
There's nothing I can do about that. That's the way my body is. The idea of being able to transform your body. The ancient Greeks understood that. But of course, like many things, you know, we somehow forgot about all that for many centuries during the Dark Ages. And it wasn't until the 19th century that this idea of being able to transform your body and become healthier became popular.
Yeah, and so if you like, the gym reappeared in Germany. How did that happen?
Yeah, so early 19th century, Sean, Napoleon had trashed the Prussian army in 1806 in this humiliating defeat. The Prussians had been considered one of the great armies of Europe. And a lowly figure by the name of Friedrich Jahn decided to set up what he described as a Turnplatz. And a Turnplatz literally means exercise field. Again, it was an outdoor gym. And the idea was to counteract what he described as the degeneracy of the Germanic race. Of course, the Germans were obsessed with their national kind of racial identity in the early and late 19th century. And this was the reason why he set up what he called a Turnplatz. Now, it was quite similar to the ancient gym. It was outside and had, you know, exercise bars and vaulting horses and climbing masts and all the rest. But it was seen as a threat to the class system in Germany at that time, because the gym was one of the first public institutions in Europe which didn't discriminate against class. People from all social backgrounds were able to enjoy this place. Eventually, the monarchy shut it down. They banned the Turnplatzes all over Germany, and the Turners, as they were known, members of this radical kind of gym association, fled to America and other parts of Europe and brought the message of the gym to America and England.
Ah, right.
And so, that's where they prospered.
Right. So then I suppose the next stage in the story is to go to London, where a gym opened and wasn't seen as non-controversial in London.
It was controversial in one sense, but the man who set it up managed to furnish it in such a way that it seemed less threatening. It was a Prussian gentleman by the name of Eugene Sandow, who was kind of known as the godfather of bodybuilding, kind of 19th century version of Arnold Schwarzenegger, let's say. He brought this idea to London. And what he did was he wanted to make the idea of exercise fashionable for the upper classes. So he deliberately hired premises in Piccadilly, in fashionable Piccadilly, and he set it up like a gentleman's club, Sean. So, you know, it was full of, you know, painted portraits and Persian rugs and potted plants, and it was all very nice, but it had exercise equipment everywhere, and it was, you know, it was called the Institute of Physical Culture or something like that. You know, so it all sounded very posh, and the idea of the middle and upper classes engaging in exercise suddenly became more appetizing than it had been before.
That's good marketing.
Yes,
really. That's
excellent.
That's marketing. Very clever marketing. Now, something we'd all see in a gym, indeed, you're never off it yourself, Simon, is the treadmill. Who invented that?
Yeah, the treadmill is a great one because it's one that a lot of listeners will associate with the gym. It's kind of the quintessential piece of gym equipment. The treadmill dates to about 1818, and it was invented by a British engineer who had been tasked with coming up with a way to make prisoners productive. So he set up this treadmill, which was basically a paddle with 45 spokes that he lined up prisoners on in Bury St. Edmunds prison in the early 1820s. And they would walk this treadmill like a stairmaster, say. And the idea was that while you tread on this machine, you milled grain such as corn. So you were treading and you were milling at the same time, hence the word treadmill. Now, eventually this kind of slave labour was outlawed with the Prisons Act in the late 19th century, but the treadmill made a triumphant return in the 1960s and has been with us ever since.
Right, okay. Now, my favourite phrase of this week's slot, the muscular Christianity movement.
Yes.
There was such a thing.
Yeah, who knew? The muscular Christianity movement of the late 19th century, Sean. This is what the YMCA was born out of. And of course, the YMCA is one of the, you know, biggest kind of...
It's by the village people.
Yes. But it's one of the biggest, I suppose, gym empires in the world, in a way. But the muscular Christianity movement, it was this idea in the late 19th century that men, Christian men, had to represent their religion by being physically dominant in order for their religion to be dominant. And it became a sign of good, strong Christian ideals if your body matched those ideals. And this was called the muscular Christianity idea. And the YMCA, the Young Men's Christian Association, was born out of that in 1844. And, you know, there's still YMCA gyms all over the UK. But then it went over to Boston in a decade later, and it became huge in the United States.
When did they start letting women into gyms then?
Oh, yeah. So, I like this because it tells us a lot about how the gym worked. So it was in 1968 that there was a very important report published called the Aerobic Exercise Report by a man by the name of Dr. Kenneth Cooper. And this, for the first time, proved the fundamental link between aerobic exercise and good health. Before 1968, it was kind of debated. The way
really?
Trump debates climate change, it was like, eh, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that changed everything. And suddenly gyms changed their focus because they realized, okay, at the moment, all gyms, they're all about dumbbells and weightlifting and bodybuilding and things like that. But women's fitness goals were completely different. They weren't necessarily interested in that. They might be more interested in aerobic exercise. So the mixture of this report, and also the likes of people like Jane Fonda, who had an empire of fitness videos in the 70s and 80s. She has this great quote, which I have to read to you before I leave, Sean. She said, "Refuse to be afraid that we will no longer be considered attractive and acceptable when we are strong." Jane Fonda had a profound influence on getting women into the gym in the 1980s.
Wow. The exercise bicycle. Where did that come from?
That's your favourite one, isn't
it? That is my favourite one, yeah. Well, I like to, you know, pump iron and be on the exercise bicycle at the same time.
You do. Yeah. You're a multitasker.
Yeah, well, you know, there's insurance concerns, obviously, but you know, it's not what I like to do.
Yeah, so the exercise bicycle was actually the first piece of electric gym equipment ever invented. Same year as the aerobic report, 1968, and it had one 12-minute cycle on it, a warm-up, four hills of differing resistance, and then a cool-down.
Right. That was absolutely fascinating. Simon, nice to see you with your clothes on for a change. Simon Tierney there. We'll take a break. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Get Ireland's first personalised pricing rates made for you.